You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeslein. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Hope you enjoy the next 1 hour where we talk outdoor topics here. I'm going to kick it off with Tim Lesmeister. We will also have Colleen Fehrenbacher, a new columnist with Minnesota Outdoor News. She's going to join me on the show here for the first time. And our old buddy Ron Husfett, he always checks in once a year, typically about this time. We'll see what he's up to. As promised, there's Tim. Hey, welcome, Mr. Lesmeister. There's a lot of items in this week's paper. One, I see the DNR has certified, what, 9 new state record fish. Some of these fish are almost unbelievable, aren't they?
The one that impresses me the most is the lake trout. I fish lake trout up on Lake Superior a lot. And when you see a fish that large come out of Lake Superior, you know, these cold waters, they don't grow fish that big, but the lake trout can get pretty massive. That record does, you know, get pushed every once in a while, but to see it broken, that's quite a feat. And I'll tell you what, whenever I see a monster lake trout, it just makes me drool. I wish I could get a hook in one that big someday myself. There's some other really huge fish. It's always amazing to me when these records get broken, because you look at the ones that were there prior to these coming along, you think there's no way that anybody is ever going to catch a fish that's going to break that record, but then somebody does.
Well, it's worth reminding folks, Tim, that the entire record fish program was revamped 2 years ago. We implemented the catch and release record system, and then we've got like these, what do they call them, you know, classic records that the DNR maintains were never necessarily verified as well as they should have been. I don't necessarily agree with that, by the way. I think we've got folks at the DNR now who think that, but I feel like maybe there were some that were questionable, but there were others that they, you know, put in this classic category that I think were absolutely solidly verified. So now what we've got are a bunch of, you know, really traditional sport fish where we're reestablishing new records here in Minnesota under the program. And so some of these records aren't that old. And that's perhaps why all of a sudden we got new crappie, new bluegill, some of these other real popular sport fish species. But we just revamped the program.
I don't think there was anything ever close to that crappie that just came through, though. I'm telling you right now, that is a monster.
We had a pair of sisters from Maple Grove that caught, one of them caught, it's like a state record steelhead. And then like the sister topped it in the same day or very soon. I've got Justin Runfield trying to run those folks down to see if we can do a story just on that.
Every year there's probably record fish that get caught. The ones I appreciate the most, if you look at some of the records that come out of the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, because they've been keeping those for a long, long time, is the quillback carp suckers and the bigmouth buffalo. Those are the ones I love seeing, because you know that those are real fish. I mean, those fish definitely are caught by somebody that's like, hey, this is a monster. I should have it weighed. And then somebody goes, look at the book and see if it's a record. And they do. And it is. And so they turn it in and get their name in the book.
One other fish story, Tim, big fish story out of Massachusetts in our Beyond Minnesota section. A guy caught and released a great white shark off Nantucket. How do you do that? Very carefully, huh?
I just want you to know this was a feat that can barely ever be replicated, because this guy caught this fish from shore. Do you know how hard it is to pull a monster fish up onto the shore in a boat? What I do when I'm out in salt waters, I throw the anchor off and I chase these fish till they get tired. And then I bring them up and we, you know, we grab them by the tail. And I hook a lot of shark. I'm not fishing for shark. I never fish for shark. But when you're fishing for groupers or any of the other big bottom fish, you'll hook shark. It's really, really tough and tricky. Now, this guy reached up and he grabbed this thing by the nose and then popped the hook out. Very, very dangerous. These fish have rows of teeth. I've seen them. They'll almost like try and, you know, snap you. And what you'll see that all of the hooks that I use, and some are big, 15, 16-aught circle hooks, they're all barbless. And the reason they're barbless is because I can reel down to the sinker, not have much line there, put a little tension on it, and then somebody get in there with pliers, and I'm talking about needle-nose pliers that are 2 feet, 3 feet long. I got some monsters. They're very, very long. And they get in there, and they just pop that hook out because I hate cutting the hooks. I hate cutting the cable because then these things got to swim around with that stainless steel hook in their mouth for who knows how long. So I'll take them out every time, but it's a trick, boy. Let me tell you, that guy, that was a feat.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister kicking off this week's broadcast. Tim, have you ever fished Lake Winnebago down in southeast Wisconsin? I used to live probably 30 miles from that lake, and I never went out on it. I was just a little kid. But I see they got round gobies in that lake. Now, that's an important fishing lake over there in Wisconsin, isn't it?
And round gobies have proven to be quite a, I should say, prolific breeder. And so they're going to create a fairly substantial forage base for the walleyes. The lake gets one day, or actually I should say one weekend, where they get tons of people go out in the wintertime for those monster sturgeon. And it's a fun lake to fish. I've been down on it a number of times. It's great walleye fishing if you know where to go. I've been out there with Mark Martin a few times, and he knows the lake well because he's fished tournaments on it. And that's why I was there, because the guys were fishing competitively. So I think the gobies are going to make some big fat walleyes, and the growth rates are going to grow substantially. But it's an invasive species. What can you say? I don't know. I hate to see these things move around from lake to lake, but they haven't really hurt the Lake Erie that much. And the smallmouth bass on Erie and the walleyes are bigger than they've ever been.
You know, the Wisconsin DNR also sent out like a graphic with that press release. And I didn't run it just because it's in Minnesota, just because it's a Wisconsin item. But there's some native species like a sculpin or something like that that looks a lot like this round goby. I didn't realize, you know, there were other, you know, native fish that look quite similar to these nasty things.
Oh, yeah. Those sculpin are great. They hide under rocks. You know, you're out there digging for crawdads to use for bait. You pick up a rock and the sculpin shoots out. You go, whoa, what's that? Look kind of prehistoric. The gobies are a little darker. They're a little rounder. That's why I think they call them round gobies. And like I said, the smallmouth bass just swim along and suck those things up as fast as they can.
Wrapping up our first segment here, Tim and I kind of focusing on fishing topics. CB Bylander had a column in this week's paper, which I liked. I like this thesis a lot, which is, you know, a topic that I keep coming back to, all these folks out there who enjoy all these great natural resources, whether it's public lands, whether it's great fishing on public waters. You know, none of this happened by accident. You don't have to go that far back. You know, early in my lifetime, probably, you know, early in your lifetime, our parents' lifetime, a lot of fishing was horrible. A lot of rivers were polluted. You know, I grew up on the Mississippi River, down in that Winona Trumplow area, where it was gorgeous when I grew up there in the 80s. I mean, we were running up and down that river, and if anything, the water quality is probably better now, other than the invasive carp that they now have in that stretch of the river. But there's a reason I was able to enjoy that, and that's because of regulation, because of the Clean Water Act and other laws that were passed to clean up these waterways. And that's why we've got great recreational activity on these lakes now and rivers and great fishing.
Well, you know, Richard Nixon was president in 72 when the Clean Water Act passed, and we can give him some credit for the EPA and for the Endangered Species Act, but this guy did us no favors when it comes to the Clean Water Act. This guy vetoed that. He was definitely hardcore against it. And this was a case of truly bipartisan legislation, and they overrode his veto. It was he didn't like it because it was a $24 billion package. And it scared him, I guess. I don't know. But it wasn't Nixon that was part of the Clean Water Act. We can give the legislative body credit for that. And I'm glad it passed. I'm glad these people This was a period, though, when there was a lot of that going on. People started to realize it. People said, we got to do something about this. And they were doing it. And I'm really glad that the Clean Water Act passed, because now look at what we've got today.
I did not know that Nixon vetoed the Clean Water Act the first time. What, they overrode the veto? There's folks out there that are Nixon proponents that love to point out how he signed all that environmental legislation. And it's true. You know, it's also true that most of it was passed on veto-proof majorities, and he didn't have much choice other than to sign it. It was, you know, pretty heavily Democratic congressman. And to your point, there were some Republicans that supported environmental legislation back then. It seems almost impossible to fathom now, doesn't it, that kind of legislation would. Can you imagine if, A, it passing Congress, and B, good Lord, Trump would just laugh at it?
Yeah, I would never fly today. None of that would. It would never even see the light of day.
Well, I'm glad it passed when it did. Tim, we'll swing back and chat with you at the end of the show.
Sounds good. I'll be here.
All right, don't go away. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
You don't hunt ducks because it's easy. You hunt because it's earned. When the first flock locks up over the decoys, that's why you do it. This July 24th through the 26th, the Grind meets its tribe in Des Moines. The Delta Waterfowl Duck Hunters Expo, presented by Hevy. 3 days of nothing but waterfowl, gear, proven rigs, calling competitions, real strategy, no fluff. Get your tickets now at deltawaterfowlexpo.com. Duck season doesn't start in October. It starts here.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
This Father's Day, don't just buy Dad another tie. Give him a legacy that will last for generations. Rite has a gun to fit his needs, whether he's in the turkey woods, duck blind, or plinking in the backyard. Dad deserves a firearm that works as hard as he does. Rite features a limited lifetime warranty, unmatched customer service, and undeniable performance. Its precision engineering meets world-class aesthetics. Make this Father's Day one he'll never forget. Visit RiteUSA.com or your local dealer today.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken's Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Some of the best Minnesota trips happen on the water. With Rainy Lake Houseboats, you can rent a fully equipped houseboat and explore the shoreline of Rainy Lake near Voyageurs National Park. Spend the day fishing, swimming, or tying up in a quiet bay and cooking dinner on board. To reserve your houseboat, call 1-800-554-9188. That number again is 1-800-554-9188 or visit rainylakehouseboats.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisline is with you for another segment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you like the broadcast. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com where you can subscribe to our print or digital versions, or you can give us a call at 800-535-5191 to subscribe. Of course, we've got Game Fair and the State Fair not too far out. Visit our booth at either of those events and you can renew your subscription there also. I want to introduce to listeners a new columnist at Outdoor News. She has not been on the show before, but she's been a great addition to Outdoor News over the past, roughly 6 months or so. Her name is Colleen Fahrenbacher. She hails from southeast Minnesota, my old stomping grounds down in Lanesboro. And she joins us now during a beautiful summer day, another beautiful summer weekend. Colleen, thanks for carving out some time to chat with me.
Absolutely. Excited to be here. And this is my second podcast ever, so I'm pretty excited.
Colleen, I would argue you're one of the leading outdoors women in the state of Minnesota already. You're the executive director down at the Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center in Lanesboro. You're also a board member for Minnesota Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. You're a columnist in Outdoor News. Tell us about your background and the road, I guess, that led you to where you are here in Minnesota these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a very generous title for me. I mean, I definitely love doing all things in the outdoors. But I moved to Minnesota 16 years ago now with the intention of just being here for a year. I was an intern at Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center with the idea of just basically learning how to become an effective outdoor educator. I have a biology degree, but I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with that. And when I found the ability to like go teach at a center and learn how to become an effective teacher, I was like, I'll try that. Maybe this is my career path. And in coming here, yes, I gained a ton of experience like learning how to be an educator and had fun with kids in the outdoors. But the biggest thing for me about working and living at Eagle Bluff was the exposure to all of the amazing opportunities in Minnesota for being outside, whether that's going to the Boundary Riders to canoe or floating down the Root River and getting to see all the fish in the river or learning about hunting, which has really like magnified the time I spend in the outdoors. Like that is now, it drives almost every part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I got into that when I was 26. I feel like now I'm trying to like make up for 26 years of not doing any hunting activities.
Let's talk a little bit about environmental learning centers. I don't know that I've talked about that a lot on the radio show in recent years, but we've got, four or five environmental learning centers around the state. They're all great. I've been to a bunch of these facilities. Of course, I've got a soft spot for Eagle Bluff because it's down in my neck of the woods, southeast Minnesota Bluff Country, which I consider some of the most important landscapes we've got in the upper Midwest. What is an environmental learning center? And speak specifically to what you got cooking at Eagle Bluff.
Yeah, for sure. We're really lucky in Minnesota to have so many outdoor learning centers, whether it's nature centers or environmental learning centers, particularly ones that do overnight programming, which is what I'm going to speak to. And like you said, there are five in Minnesota. There were six prior to COVID. Primarily what we do is get kids outside to have positive experiences. And what set us apart from perhaps other nature centers or outdoor centers is primarily what we do is overnight multi-day experiences. And we primarily serve schools. So specific to Eagle Bluff, we host about 130 schools annually that come from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois. We have one from Missouri and huge shout out. We had one from France this past year, which was pretty incredible. Yep. And so they come to our center and they stay usually 3 days and two nights and take classes in science topics, cultural history, or like team building and adventure. And each center has probably 30 to 40 classes to choose from, but it's up to the teacher to decide what do they want the goals of the trip to be. And then they work with us. We create a schedule of classes that meet their academic goals. Maybe their goals are for more team building or social emotional learning. And then they come here and have an amazing experience while getting fed and staying in a climate controlled dormitory. Mm-hmm. And again, having fun in the outdoors. And the kicker is they don't get to use their phones. So they're truly being disconnected and having to connect with each other, including teachers and, you know, their peers in the outdoors.
If there's an educator or a parent out there listening who is saying, I'd love to get my kid involved at Eagle Bluff or another environmental learning center, what's your website? And we'll circle back to this again at the end of our segment.
Yeah, EagleBluffMN, like Minnesota.org.
EagleBluffMN.org. This is Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. We are chatting with Colleen Fahrenbacher. She's the Executive Director at Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center down in Lanesboro. We're talking about what she's got cooking at that center and also just about her background and how she's become very active, a leader in that, some might say, on our outdoor scene. Tell us how you got involved with backcountry hunters and anglers. And where are you from originally? I mean, you didn't grow up hunting the backcountry, right?
I didn't grow up hunting at all, so no. Originally from Northeast Ohio, bopped around a little bit in California, Louisiana, and Georgia post-college, and then, you know, landed here 16 years ago. You know, as I've gotten to know more about the hunting community and gotten really passionate about conservation and our public lands, I started learning more about the various wildlife and conservation organizations out there, and backcountry hunters and anglers definitely stood out and attracted my attention largely because of their advocacy work around public lands. And newer to Minnesota, you know, when I first came here and living at Eagle Bluff, I didn't have private land and I still don't own private land. I actually live on site at Eagle Bluff. And so if I were going to go recreating or hunting, it was largely on public land. And where Eagle Bluff is located, we're pretty lucky that we've got a lot, hundreds of acres of state land around us. And so even prior to hunting, a lot of my recreation time was on that public land. And again, learning about what BHA's mission is, I was like, this is an organization I want to be a part of. And I did a mentored hunt with some board members for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers probably 3 years ago. There was a turkey hunt. And that's where I really started learning about what they do in the Minnesota chapter. And about a year and a half ago, one of the board members approached me and said, hey, I think you'd be a really great board member. And I was unsure of my capacity at the time, but that was one of those ones where I was like, I'm going to find a way to make this work because the Minnesota chapter in general is a leader across the country.
Yeah,
I think we have the second largest membership anywhere in the country behind Montana. Mm-hmm. So I've been on the board now for about a year and I'm still trying to figure out how the board works and what our main initiatives are and how we, you know, choose our priorities. But it's a great group of people, and I'm really excited to continue with them.
You're trying to recruit some more women to the organization? Is that part of your personal mission?
Definitely. Right now I'm on a board of all men, which is totally fine. But yeah, I'd definitely love to get some more women on the board and women involved in the chapter as well, because that's something that I've definitely struggled with is finding women to share the passion of hunting with. And I've got a pretty good crew right now, thanks to the DNR Becoming an Outdoor Woman program. I've really mm-hmm. connected with folks there. And
sure.
Now several times a year, we go on hunting trips together.
You're a hardcore dog person. You've got, what did you say, two golden retrievers and a Brittany. Are you emphasizing upland bird hunting mostly with those canines?
Absolutely. That is why we have them. And I did not grow up with Brittany's. I grew up with golden retrievers. And so it's really fun to have the flushers with sure. the pointer. It's definitely been a challenge as far as training. And our oldest golden retriever is lazy and she watches the Brittany and then we'll jump into the flush, which frustrates me.
They're smart. Hey,
they are for sure. So we now, my husband and I will often hunt them separately just so okay. that the golden doesn't get too lazy.
And you had a great column about your elk hunting experiences. There's not a lot of, I think, young women who've hunted elk as much as you have, Colleen.
Oh, it's only 4 years, but it is a huge passion of mine. I pulled a tag for Colorado this year. And what I love about it is it gives me something year round to train for and have a goal for. And yeah. right now I'm deep into the fitness part of things. I'm a 5'4½ female and that mountain does not get any smaller just I'm small.
You've killed some turkeys, right?
Yes.
I used to work for a bull hunting magazine and my mentor there, he said he considered elk 700 pound turkeys. He thought there were a lot of similarities between hunting the two species with the calling and running up and down the hills and the terrain and that sort of thing. Yeah. You buy that?
Well, I don't want to because this was the first year I hunted turkeys with my bow and I failed miserably because I got too amped up. I was able to take two shots, but I was so excited because they were like 10 yards away. I completely biffed it. But to your point, I would agree with you. It's so much like elk hunting because you're talking to them. I call it some of the most optimistic hunting you'll do because you know they're there if they are calling, right? But I've, you know, that's the reason why I bow hunted turkeys this year was to practice under pressure. My husband was like, you should do that. And unfortunately, I just messed it up.
That same mentor who was the best bow hunter I ever knew, he's in the Bow Hunting Hall of Fame, as he should be. He also said of turkey hunting, turkeys are meant to have their heads blown off by shotguns. He did not believe in wasting his time with a bow on turkeys. But hey, to each his own. And I think your concept there to build experience for elk hunting with a bow via turkey hunting is an admirable one.
Thank you.
Colleen, I'm out of time here. It's really been fun to get to know you a little more. I encourage folks to read you in Outdoor News, where you write once a month, and you've had some great columns with a lot of good photos. It's been a great addition to Outdoor News. One more time, if folks want to get their kids involved with what you got cooking down there at Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center, how can they do that?
They can check us out at eaglebluffmn.org or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
eaglebluffmn.org. Well, thanks a lot for spending this segment with me. Have a great summer. Good luck with your training and good luck chasing elk in the mountains of Colorado this fall.
Thanks so much, Rob.
All right. That was Colleen Fehrenbacher. Check out Eagle Bluff Environmental Learning Center at eaglebluffmn.org. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
The Woodstock for Hunters Hunt Stock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam, July 17th through the 19th. Hang out with all the boys from the hunting public. Seminars from Lanny Benoit, Dan Infault, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Malls, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. Huge giveaways, top hunting exhibitors, 3D archery, live music, and campsites right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code RADIO at checkout to save 10%. Hunt Stock. Feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring wetlands for nearly 90 years. From breeding grounds and migration routes to wintering areas across North America, we need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone. DU volunteers are the engine that raises the funds to make conservation happen, selling tickets, securing donations, and finding sponsors. If you've got the passion, we've got a role for you. Visit ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation. For a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
A bullseye rash can be the first sign of Lyme disease, but not everyone will develop the rash. If you've been in areas where Lyme disease is common and develop fever, fatigue, facial paralysis, or joint and muscle pain, seek medical care. Reduce your chances of getting Lyme disease by wearing insect repellent, showering soon after coming indoors, and checking for ticks daily. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme. A message from CDC.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks all for tuning in. Hope you like the content here. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you'd like to subscribe to print or digital versions of our fine content. A gentleman who joins me here about once a year, usually every June, he checks in. He's a educator, during the regular school year and during the summer. He's got a lot of different things cooking. It's our friend Ron Husfett. He's from the Northwest Metro. He's a familiar face out of Game Fair, which is not too far off. And he joins us now, actually calling in from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. How are you doing, Ron?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm just off of a logging road up here, so hopefully you don't hear a logging truck go by, but you can hopefully hear the creek and the birds in the background. It's gorgeous up here right now.
It's a gorgeous part of the Upper Midwest. I haven't been back there in a while, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit. You get out on the big lake, Lake Superior, and do the lake trout thing this time of year. I don't have any experience fishing lakers on Lake Superior. I've done it on a lot of our inland lakes. I associate lake trout up there with being in super deep water. I don't know. Do they come up? Are they in, you know, more shallower water, the top tier of the lake, you know, right after ice out like they are on smaller lakes? But whatever, right now they're deep, right?
They're kind of all over the water column. It sort of depends on, you know, the current seams and the water temperatures. And it's still pretty cold right now. So I know there's some guys where we go out of is in the Lance Berga area there by the Keweenaw Peninsula. And some folks like to do they like to troll. We go with my wife's uncle who lives up here, and he does a thing that's called bobsticking. It's a very Youper style of fishing. It's basically you get this wooden or plastic, basically a big oval shape, and it's 2 feet around per wrap. So you're basically hand lining with coated cable line, so you get the weight. You've got a big, huge 2 to 4 ounce jig on there. You can use glow, or you can have some hair on there, or just have a regular old jig. But you tip it with either a chunk of like a sucker minnow, or a chunk of a smelt, or both if you want
something
to.
Oily, a chunk of meat, huh?
Chunk of meat, oily, and you want to hide that hook in the meat so that they don't see the hook. That seems to make a difference. And then you count the number of wraps as it slowly rolls off, and you watch it drift down into the abyss. And we're fishing out there anywhere usually from 180 to 240 feet. So that's a lot of wraps a line coming off as you go down there. And it doesn't take long to get good at finding the bottom and then being able to adjust. And you're fishing usually just right off the bottom, maybe anywhere from a couple inches to a couple feet. You play around, experiment. And you're bobsticking. You're jigging for them. When you feel the weight, as soon as you feel it, you obviously set the hook and you start pulling fast. And these are, you know, we're talking deep down fish. So the key is you pull fast and you get them up before they can get too much of a fight into them. You catch a really big one, and no matter what, you're going to get a fight. And if you do have a big one, everybody else has to start pulling up really fast as well. Otherwise, you're going to end up, you know, pulling in all the lines.
You'll get tangled up if you don't.
Oh, yeah, you'll get very tangled up. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, if you pull fast, they seem to sort of just streamline up. And once they get enough of a pressure change, they don't fight too hard. You know, pull up the line, you let it coil at your feet, kind of like old school ice fishing. And you net them right at the boat there. And it's a great way. It's a lot of fun to catch a fairly good amount of lake trout on a good day out there. I forgot to mention, you anchor down so that you're not drifting too far, because when you've got that much line out, the reason you use such a heavy jig is because there's quite a current out there. But it's a fun way to fish. You can get, you know, four or five, we've gotten six people in the boat with lines down at one time. You know, you sort of, it's like I said, it's kind of a open water way to ice fish. You'll get some good action. And these are kind of the more oily lake trout. I'm not sure if they're officially the Siskiwits or if they're just sort of the more oily lake trout that like to be on the bottom in that deep water. But they taste really good. They're great smoked, but they're also really good grilled, and they grill up just fine. So,
what's the biggest one you've caught out there, Ron?
Oh, we've caught a couple in the 8, 9, 10 pound range.
Okay.
So, gentleman that we go with, Uncle Dave, we call him, he's caught 20 pounders out there. So there's some big ones down there. But it's a different way to fish that is definitely worth checking out.
I've never been a huge lake trout fan. I mean, when they're fresh out of the water and you fry them, then they're okay fried. Otherwise, I'd like your idea of grilling them. I think that's the best way to go. It's not as dark or red as a salmon. It's not as light as whitefish. It's kind of orangish. It kind of falls in between, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got that nice orange color. When you grill it, I don't know, it pulls some of the oils out. It's a little more of an oily fish on average. but it tastes really, really good. Anybody who's ever been to any of the places on the North Shore that serves fresh lake trout, there's a couple places I know that we go to in Grand Marais, and it's phenomenal, cooked a lot of different ways. But yeah, I think grilling is the best way to go. We also go to a couple inland lakes up here and do some trolling, some either planer boards or just get down deep with lead core. My son and my nephew last year caught some major lake trout in the 10 to 15 pound range. Kept a couple, released most of them. We got some great photos and then some great meals out of those fish.
Lake trout tips from our friend Ron Husvet. This is Outdoor News Radio. You mentioned your son, Ronnie. He wrapped up his high school shooting career at the big Minnesota Clay Target League Championships out in Alexandria last week. How did he do, Ron? What did you make of the event? I'm sure you've been there before. Was it as big as ever?
The last year was his first year making it to state, and it was fun to be out there. It was even more fun this year because the weather was better, and huge crowds. It's always impressive. He's on the Blaine High School trap team, and he's the captain of the ski team. So we did that ski tournament as well, which is at the Minneapolis Gun Club. That's a lot smaller event. But the one at Alexandria for the trap shooting, that's a huge, huge event. You walk around from one end to the other, and I feel like it's almost a mile the whole way across. It's tons of teams out there shooting, a lot of young people having a really good time, and some really good shooters out there as well.
One of the biggest shooting events in the world, I think. What a tremendous success that has been. And congrats to Ronnie. He's off to college. You told me what he's doing, focusing on heading into a wildlife or fisheries career.
Yeah. And actually the trap and skeet shooting got him one of these Jim Sable scholarships for environmental sciences and conservation education. And that's what he's going into. He wants to be a fish and wildlife management person. And he's going to start off his career in that at Central Lakes College up in the Brainerd Lakes area.
Good.
Which was going to just go straight 4 year at University of Wisconsin Stevens Point. They've got a really good premier program. But he chose Central Lakes because you're out in the field 3 days a week going down to the wildlife management area at Ripley down there. And he loved that you get to be out in the field right away.
We got just a couple of minutes left here, Ron. We got a press release from the Superior National Forest this past week explaining that they intend to modify their cancellation policy for Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness permits. You and I are both BWCA guys. That's something we chat about every year. I like what they're doing. I'm glad. I think this has been a long time coming. I wish they had done it sooner. What's your take on it?
Yeah, in looking at the structure of how they do it. So basically, when you want to go to the Boundary Waters, you make a reservation, and you used to be able to cancel right up to almost the day before you went on the trip, and you get a full refund. What's been happening in recent years is that there's been a lot of people booking trips and then canceling them at the last second. And it's sort of been detrimental to the whole system because you could do that. You get a full refund. Other folks feel like, oh, I can't go up there because there's no permits available. When you call outfitters, they would tell you, just keep your dates open and check at the last minute. There might be something opening up. But that's hard to plan a trip and take days off of. And most people don't have the flexibility in their schedule to do that. So they've got this, the proposed, the refund structure is now, if you cancel more than 28 days out, you get half of your deposit back. If you cancel in the last 28 days to 3 days before, you get 1/4, 25% of your deposit back. And if you have to cancel within 2 days, you don't get any of it back.
And by the way, there's a public comment period on this. This isn't locked up. So the U.S. Forest Service, Superior National Forest, is taking comments on this a number of different ways. I tell you what, go to outdoornews.com. We've got a story about it. You can find the links to it there. It's something I support, and I intend to offer my two cents on that myself, Ron.
Yeah, same here.
Hey, before we go, gamefair.com, I want to remind folks, visit that. We've got 2 weekends of Game Fair, August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and 14th, 15th, and 16th. You'll be running around out there again. Chuck Delaney is planning another big year of Game Fair at the Armstrong Ranch up in Ramsey.
This is the 45th year of Game Fair is right here. So if people have not been out there yet, go to gamefair.com, check out the photos and the videos, or visit us on the social media, Game Fair USA, and it's a great time. Bring your dog, bring the family, and have a great day outdoors and lots of experiences for the kids of all ages, actually, and also for the dogs, lots of doggy activities and doggy games.
You better believe it. Yeah, visit the Outdoor News booth, renew your subscription there, get a free cap when you do. It's something I always look forward to, and you and both your kids will be out there working hard again this year, Ron?
Oh, yeah, we'll be out there, the whole family.
Sounds good. Well, thanks for carving out some time while you're traveling to share what you've got cooking, some ideas on lake trout fishing, and some of the other things going on this summer. Safe travels, and we'll see you at Game Fair for sure.
It's always good to be on. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, that's our buddy Ron Husvet. Check him out at Game Fair here in about a month and a half, gamefair.com. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
This July, it's all happening in Des Moines. The Delta Waterfowl Duck Hunters Expo, presented by Hevy, is coming to town. 3 days, one place, the biggest names in waterfowl. The latest gear, boats, calls, decoys, and hands-on demos from the pros who live it. Bring the whole family. July 24th, 25th, and 26th at the Iowa Event Center. Tickets and event details are available now at deltawaterfowlexpo.com. Don't just talk about duck season. Get ready for it.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
The Woodstock for Hunters Hunt Stock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam July 17th through the 19th. Hang out with all the boys from the hunting public. Seminars from Lanny Benoit, Dan Infault, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Malls, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. Huge giveaways, top hunting exhibitors, 3D archery, live music, and campsites right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code RADIO at checkout to save 10%. Hunt Stock. Feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio, final segment of this week's broadcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Rob Gerisline. Hope you like what we chat about here. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. Subscribe to our print or digital versions. Tim Lesmeister here to help me bring it home. Tim, we had a story from Tori McCormick. Shaping up pretty good in farm country if you're a young pheasant this year. We've had some rain, and we had some, you know, even semi-cool temperatures. It wasn't too far below normal, but it wasn't so cold that I guess we're worried about the pheasant chicks. I think it was warmer in the southwest part of the state where we really care about pheasants. Outlook optimistic for pheasants maybe this fall.
Great hatch this year. It's going to be a lot of chicks are going to make it. We might even see more than 10 pheasants in Iowa this year. The thing about it is you got to have a winter that allows these birds to maintain some warmth and cover. We had that. There's some good carryover now. It was cold. and a little bit windy, but, you know, not so much snow that it kept them from getting into spots they needed to, which means that we had a lot of nests. Now, the nesting success is based on how much rain you get, how much flooding there is, how many of these nests get washed out, and if there's a chance for them to re-nest after the... And, of course, predators, they're always a problem. But if you have habitat, if you have enough habitat, which we really don't if you think about it, you're going to get a lot of birds. So I'm thinking it's going to be a good year, probably not a great year, but it's going to be a very good year in Minnesota for those that want to get into pheasant country and do some hunting. I can see license sales are going to be up this year.
We got a long way to go between now and mid-October. So a lot of things can happen, but I think we're probably setting the table for a pretty good year, and that's some good news. Another front page story, Tim, or at least another big story in this week's paper, Tim. We wrapped up the Youth Target League out in Alexandria this past Tuesday, June 23rd. That's a huge, huge shooting event. We talked to Ron Hussfeld about it a little bit too earlier in the show. Some of the numbers that these kids put up, the number of clays they break, is unbelievable, isn't it?
I've been at these events. I actually did some stories on these youth leagues. I'm always amazed because these high school shooters are incredible shooters. They're shooting from the same zones as all of these great trap shooters and doing just as well as any of those that have practiced for years and years. I'm looking at the scores of some of these, 96, 98, 99. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And I say, you know what? The sport itself is extremely safe. When I did some articles here a few years back about the youth sporting leagues, I wanted to find out how many injuries, and they couldn't find any. Right. They were like zero. And I'm thinking to myself, all you people that have your kids playing football, soccer, baseball, you're going to find some injuries in those sports. Youth shooting, none. So, you know, you think about it, oh, all these guns, very safe. And the kids are loving it. And I mean, you're getting to see some, you know, dedicated individuals that are working really hard and just putting some scores on the boards that are just absolutely phenomenal.
Well, we're also seeing some kids who maybe don't have that natural athleticism to participate in some of those other traditional sports that you mentioned, who are just knocking the lights out of these clays. You know, they're showing, yeah, I may not look like a track athlete, but I still have hand-eye coordination and look what I can do. And they're finding, you know, that camaraderie on a team. And they're having success in an athletic event, a sporting event. So I love to see that. You know, some of these kids, Tim, they, you know, you talk to the coaches, you talk to, like, or Eric Morgan had a story where he talked about this, where some of these kids come out the first time out, they're breaking one or two clays, you know, the first couple times out. And, you know, by the end of the season or after a couple of years, they're knocking 19, 20, 21 or more. They're breaking the vast majority of these clays. And it just goes to show you, you know, it's practice makes perfect.
It's a lot about that, but it's also a lot about you build up relationships with the people that you're shooting with. When I was shooting sporting clays competitively, what I found is that a group of us would get together and we'd watch each other and we'd coach each other and we'd have, you know, discussions about what was working and what wasn't and how to, you know, basically do those tough targets, that dropping, quartering target that always gets everybody. But after you've hit one a few times and you figure out what that sight picture is, pretty soon it's working. So I think these kids are not only developing a nice relationship with their firearm and the sport itself, but with a lot of other youths that are out there participating as well. And so they're developing friendships with people that are helping them to just get better at the sport.
Tim, what do you make of all these K-9 teams that the Minnesota DNR has? What are we up to, like nine dog and handler teams around the state? They're a good thing, I guess. It seems like the DNR kind of moving more towards labs and not so much the big German Shepherd looking dogs. I don't know if that's because they look a little less intimidating. I also think these dogs are being used for are different purposes. They're used more for tracking. They're more for sniffing things out. Maybe they're trying to be a little less intimidating. But they got a bunch of these teams, and I think they keep pretty busy.
Yeah, and I don't think that the intimidation factor really matters to them. I think it's about what that dog is capable of producing. And you hit the nail on the head. Labrador Retrievers have such incredible noses. And, you know, you look at a German Shepherd, they're a very smart dog. They'll actually perform well on commands. But if I want to literally track somebody and I want a dog that's actually got some smarts, I don't want a bloodhound. I want a Labrador Retriever. You know what I'm saying? Those bloodhounds are great trackers, but they're not the smartest dog on the planet. Now, I might get some blowback from that one, but I'm telling you right now, Labs are smart dogs. They're friendly. They're fun to be around. They're lovers, but they're also hardworking dogs that can really literally flush out just about anything you send them in to find.
Outdoor News Radio winding down. Just a few minutes left here with Tim Lesmeister for another week. Tim, DNR issuing a press release adding 5 counties to its deer feeding and attractant ban. They've added Becker, Clearwater, Grant, McLeod, and Meeker. We're up to 37 counties now where you can't do those activities if you're a deer hunter.
Could this be because of CWD?
No, without question, yeah.
Without question. And here's the weird thing. Most people read that and they go, oh, I guess I don't get to have a feeder and I better not put out any salt licks. But you're attracting deer if you put in a food plot. Now, you're going to hate that because these counties are basically saying, you can't do anything to attract deer. We don't want you to do anything that is going to put these deer together as a group in a tight area. And a food plot's going to do that. I think anywhere that you have CWD, you're going to have to really restrict anything that can put these deer into what I call a yarding situation where they group up very tightly. And food plots fall into that category.
Yeah, 37 counties, that's close to half the state now. And the DNR press release saying, even where it's not banned, we discourage people from feeding deer. You and I remember a couple of years where the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association went out and had big deer feeding years, right? When it was tough winters and they were dropping pellets. I think it was a year or two before I got at Outdoor News. And then they did it again, I don't know, 15 years ago, roughly, when they did it. They spent a bunch of money feeding deer. I got to think if that circles around again and MDHA or any of the other group wants to do that, they're going to get pretty hard pushback from the DNR this next time around.
I don't see it happening because, you know, most of those areas they fed the deer were farther north than northern Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so basically, if you're feeding the deer, you're also feeding the wolves. You know, there's just no getting around it. I mean, it's gotten to the point now where the deer numbers up in the northern tier of the state are down. There's no doubt about it. And a lot of it has to do with many different things. But definitely wolf predation is a big factor. So I don't think feeding the deer is going to be something that comes up again ever.
And we've got CWD now in, you know, maybe not extreme northern Minnesota, but, you know, the north central part of the state, Park Rapids, some of those areas are now CWD zones. And I guarantee you, we don't want to have organized deer feeding anywhere near that. This is supposition. Who knows? If we'll ever have a really brutal winter again, the way climate change is warming everything up there, that'll tick off the global warming deniers. As we wrap up this week's show, Tim, how's that?
Yeah, well, it always does. I mean, there's a lot of things that point to the planet warming, but I do believe that in the situation we're facing right now, warmer winters probably is something that the deer wouldn't mind one little bit.
I wonder if we can blame that reflecting pool shenanigans and brouhaha in D.C. on global warming. What do you think of that, Tim?
No, I'm blaming the Russians for that.
Oh, okay. All right. Someone's responsible.
Somebody.
Absolutely. It's not just some single-celled algae organism.
No, that
couldn't be.
They don't have much for brains, so got to find somebody to put the hammer to.
All right, fun stuff to wrap up the show. Thanks, Tim. Have a good week ahead, buddy.
All right, we'll catch up to you soon.
I'm Tim Lesmeister. Thank you to him, all of our other guests. I hope everyone has a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisline, signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.